You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 13th of August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Mia Kruger, the Exxaro results cold generally. And of course, Kruger International's got that little bit of green energy in their funds. It's called an investment space. Christo Duval, who founded 2020 Bank back in 2001, which was online, and now suddenly all the new banks are online. Are we not going forward in 20 years of banking? Johan Erasmus, they've got their oil ETN. It expired. They've got a new one, but now it's Brent instead of West Texas Intermediate. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb is the commodity super cycle stalling. We are seeing some slower growth out of China, taking some steam out of runaway commodity prices. Stalling maybe just slowing. And as we've said before, the commodity prices stay where they are. The miners continue to make super profits. Business Day, rules for generation of 100 megawatts finally gazetted. It was gazetted yesterday. It's everything we wanted. It even includes rights to wheeling. So this is a big deal. Does also maybe spell the death of coal. Morning markets, US was green, the S&P up 0.3%, NASDAQ up 0.4%, Asia green with Sydney up 0.5%, and Tokyo up 0.1%. Commodities overnight mixed, gold a little stronger, 1,757, Rand 1,479. Top 40 looking for about 100 points red open, that's just over 0.1%, and that is 10 cent trades down 0.5%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Mia Kruger, director at Kruger International. Mia, appreciate the early morning time. A bunch of results starting to come out. Exxaro came yesterday, really saved by iron ore, and we get the iron ore story. I mean, they made all their money there. They gave us a special dividend. Coal being hurt by Transnet problems, simply not able to get enough out via Richards Bay Coal Terminal. As an investment case, I mean, I was chatting with Just Share yesterday in terms of the UN climate report, the 100 megawatt, which is mostly going to be obviously green and renewable. Is coal still potentially an investment case for yourself and your colleagues?
Good morning, Simon. No, I don't think that would be a focus point for us, even though it could be a profitable focus point. We've also seen coal prices nearly double over the last year. But the fact remains, as you mentioned, that the Paris Agreement is definitely something that everyone in the world needs to focus on, because it will affect every single person on Earth's well-being. So as long as Elon Musk is not succeeding yet with his traveling to Mars and his colony on Mars, I think every one of us has the responsibility to do what we can and how we can to improve the global warming situation that we're in. So yes, I mean, just on that, I think coal for us is a no-go at this stage, even though we still have small exposures to it. We won't be actively increasing that.
I take your point, and you started by saying not necessarily that it won't make money. Coal's going to be here for a bit, but you just look at the larger planet, and you've got your Gaia fund down from Titicaca Forest area, and you're like, you know what? There's other ways we can make money without damaging the planet.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that's the fact. The fact remains that there are so many opportunities, investment opportunities globally, not even to mention locally, that you can have a look at. It's not always easy to find, but the fact remains that we'd rather look elsewhere to see how we can make a positive contribution to the environment than a negative one.
Yep, I agree. I like that. I like that lots. MTN results out yesterday. Lots happening in those results. What stood out for me was the tie-up with Sanlam. It's going to be $100 million, half each. In essence, insurance products, basic savings products. My sense is this is a bold move from the telco. They need to do it because they need to become more than just a data provider. And this could, if it works, become big for them.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's the most exciting part. It's sort of looked over by most people up until now due to the fact that it's less than 9% of their interim revenue and that they came to the market with. But it was the fastest growing part of it. So it grew by over 22% in the past 6 months. And this JV with Sanlam that they're entering into, where they will be providing various insurance and some basic investment products into Africa, I think will be something that could scale for them. You know, the fact remains that most people in Africa don't have mobiles yet. The mobile penetration rate isn't even at 39%. I see that's the target for 2025. So we still have massive growth to benefit from there in Africa. And then the fact is also that those most customers with mobiles and living in Africa have been overseen for banking and for any financial services due to the fact that we know that it's a poorer region and that the infrastructure isn't there and that people sort of don't even qualify for the normal banking because they're just not financially viable for those sort of products. So I think this will be an interesting JV, and it could really benefit the user as much as these two companies, because people will be able to get something a little bit more specific to what they might need. We'll have to see how it plays out. MTN does have about 6 million active policyholders already in a product or on a platform that they call InsureTech. So they're aiming to grow this to about 30 million in the next 4 years with Sanlam. So we'll see how that goes. We don't know what the insurance products will be yet or how the investments will look. I'm personally not a big fan of investing through an insurance company, but it depends on what they will be offering. We also know that Sanlam is the provider and has been the longest standing provider of ETFs in South Africa, and I really hope that will be the route that they'll follow.
Yeah, I take your point about investing through an insurer, but perhaps ETFs, because of course they own Satrix. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, chatting with Mia there, our poll on Twitter, LinkedIn. Would you buy an insurance product or a savings product from your telco? You can have your vote, you can have your say on our Twitter and LinkedIn profiles.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Christo Darvall, founder of 227, also founder of 2020, a bank back in 2001. Christo, I appreciate the early morning. Back in 2001, when you launched 2020, I was a client. I don't recall the fee structure. I remember it was online only. I remember it felt like we were living on the cutting edge, you know, back in the early days of the internet. It was heady days back then. We had just got ADSL, and it felt like we could almost do anything, I suppose.
Oh, Simon, morning. We're giving our ages away.
We are.
It's 20 years ago. And you're right. We did think we could change the world.
But that's the problem that we've run into, because all these new banks coming now, and I'm not dissing the new banks. They're doing great. The Discovery's Time Bank, Michael Jordan and his colleagues with Bank Zero. But they're all trumpeting the fact that they're online only. They're trumpeting the app only. And I keep on thinking, but hang on, you did that 20 years ago. You know, have we not seen any progress in banking in 2 decades?
Well, it's a bit of an unfair question, because as we just reminisced, you know, 20 years ago, I remember telling people we launched 2020 between 9/11 and the first bursting of the dot-com bubble.
Yes.
And that was before social media. You know, Facebook launched in 2004, I think, and they became big only in about 2008. No, iPhone was launched in 2007. We didn't have the cloud or anything like that. So it was literally online was new. You know, the web was new. The internet was new. And so to compare what we could do then with what the new starter banks are able of doing now is an interesting one. Because I think our obsession about doing what's right for the customer is what gave us such loyal fans 20 years ago.
And that was it. And as I said, I mean, I you know, we had internet banking in 2001. It was a little bit clunky. It worked. I remember there was an absolute client in Durbanville who got her keypad was hacked and her account was hacked and suddenly no one wanted to do it. And you came along and said, you know what, forget branches, not going to do it. We're going to be online only. And it was a little scary, but in the couple of years, it worked. Because, of course, you used the Sumbo license and then, you know, 2 years later, Sumbo hit the wall and that took you out at the knees. But it did work as a concept. I mean, it was a functionally viable and frankly, an exciting a concept, which did as it said on the sticker. It enabled us to bank.
No, it was. And it still brings back fond memories. You know, there's, you mentioned Sumbo going into creatorship. Mm-hmm. You know, and as I said, it was prior to social media. But the customers found a way that they could talk to each other on what we had. I think we called it a customer forum. And kept each other going. And there was this loyalty club. I think it was three or four loyalty clubs that's formed completely without our intervention, just to make sure that 2020 could survive. And I like to believe that it influenced the late John, the curator, that was a shame. He was such a kind man. He kept us alive until we could sell 2022 Standard Chartered Bank. But it was about the customers just rallying around a bank. It was amazing to see.
Yeah, customers loving banks. I remember we had a braai when it went down, a sort of memorial braai in a sense, down in KZN. I suppose it is that sense of that focus was to customers, which was completely new. It was totally online. Yeah. That was also completely new. But what we've seen in the two decades since, I mean, perhaps it was unfair to say that the banks haven't progressed. I suspect a lot of what's happening in banking has probably actually been the back office processes, you know, the ability, the snap scans and the like, which have come along.
Well, I think one way of comparing is probably, you know, I was blessed with the most amazing team around us. You know, it was really these, I think I just turned 40. Yeah, and you know, you're so idealistic and young, and this internet came along, and we had this army of people that just believed in that. And then one of the beautiful people that was in the team said, you know, we're building almost like this money fairy that needs to know what I want before I want it, that needs to understand my entire life story and predict when I'll have a problem. So it was more a culture and a mindset that drove the development of the product. The fact that we used the internet was just because we saw that as the future. We were and completely idealistically so. But it was that. So if you then ask, have the big banks and the new incumbents done that? That is an interesting question, because I think that's who will be successful of the new guys. Are they really relevant for the customer when the customer need something? When she is in need for something, then they must be there, not because they have a sexy brand or sexy technology.
Yeah, I take your point. It's that front end, and it's that ability to engage and to preempt what the customer's looking for. And often it's really simple stuff, but we need it. We will leave that there. That's Krista Dove, as I said, founder 22/7, perhaps more excitingly, founder 2020, the first pure online bank in the world, launched in 2001. Krista, I appreciate the time. You, sir, are a legend.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Joining now with Johanna Rasmus, Executive Director at One Invest SA. They've, of course, got a bunch of ETFs, some unit trusts, and some ETNs. Johanna, appreciate the early morning. We chatted, was it late last year, maybe early this year, when a couple of your ETNs expired, which is what an exchange-traded note does do. It does have a finite life. More recently, a couple have expired. You've renewed the oil and the copper. A couple of questions. The first one is on the oil. It used to track West Texas into Intermediate. You've moved that now to Brent. A lot of chatter I've seen on the social medias is that this is a view that you're taking on West Texas over Brent. My sense is almost certainly not. It's just there's a structural reason why you have shifted the underlying a barrel of oil.
Yeah, morning, Simon. When we originally did the ETNs, which was the first ones that was listed in South Africa, we have to look for underlying assets to hedge ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years ago, Brent oil futures was not an easy way in, was not easy tradable. With West Texas, that was a lot easy tradable. We now, when we mature, now that we move to Brent, is that South Africa's fuel prices are based off Brent oil and not WTI. So that's why having the opportunity now, being able to track the futures a lot more liquid, we decided let's rather give a oil ETN that relates more to South African fuel prices.
Okay, that makes sense. Because as you said, West Texas is not something which is a South African consumer is directly exposed to. The folks who'd held the West Texas one, I mean, that ETN then expired. They then it disappeared from their portfolio. And that was when it first alerted. People were saying, someone stole my ETN. The cash has now arrived in their accounts. They're now sitting in a pile of cash. If they still want exposure, they simply just go and rebuy that particular one. I imagine you couldn't just roll it because you had changed the underlying basket.
That was one of the reasons, Simon. But we also, as I said, it was pioneering when we listed the first ETN. And it didn't have mechanics in the ETN itself, which allowed us to roll it into new notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the JSE then wouldn't allow us to do that either. So it might have been preferable, but we just couldn't do it. We didn't think that far 10 years ago.
And that's the point. I mean, I was chatting to a moment ago with Christo, going back 20 years, and this is a decade ago. And although, in some senses, it was a hop, skip, and a jump, bringing ETNs, and particularly on commodities, was huge and innovative back then, and something we hadn't seen on the JSE at all. And it has... It's been a success. I mean, your a lot of folks refer to the rhodium. That, of course, is an ETF. But the oil one has done spectacularly well.
Correct. And you can see there's a lot of demand for the oil ETN. So the copper one, and that's why we reissued those notes. We also issued the new notes with a 20-year maturity.
Mm-hmm.
But also learn from our mistakes. And it now has a mechanism to roll it into a new ETN as it reaches maturity.
You mentioned that there quickly, that we've been talking the oil, but of course there is a copper as well that has come through. Is that, and copper always confuses me, there's a copper per ton price, there's a copper per pound price. Which one are you referencing?
We're doing the copper per ton.
Okay, copper per ton. So two new ETNs there, SB Oil and SB COP, if you want exposure, direct exposure to commodities. One Brent and one copper per ton. Johanna Rasmus, Executive Director, One Invest SA. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Remember, you'll find us live every morning, 6:30. And you can also have a vote on our poll, LinkedIn and Twitter. Yesterday's poll, we were asking you, Nedbank, decent results on Thursday. I thought Nesanaya concurred. And the price was back at February 2020 levels. In other words, recovered the pandemic crash mostly. Our question was, are you buying banks? About a quarter of you were, yes, you're picking some winners. About a quarter of you were liking the Finney ETF from the Satrix. That's where I sit. Half of you were, nope, trouble ahead, not so keen. We live every day, 6:30 a.m., podcast available from 7 a.m. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, Eleanor. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial service provider. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.